Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. I am Jason Powell, joined today by Jake Barnett. And coming up after this brief break for non-members, we will be discussing both WWE Raw and 205 Live going on the road with house shows. Stay tuned. All right, Jake Barnett joins me now. Follow him online at BarnettJake on Twitter. And I chimed in with a full review of last night's WWE Raw, but it's always good to get a different perspective, and so we are bringing Jake on board for that. Jake, let's start with one of the more buzzworthy moments in the show. It's official. We're getting broken slash, he's in WWE now, so woken, Matt Hardy. And he had the back-and-forth exchange kind of creatively done. It wasn't like they were talking to one another. It was just kind of an interesting video with Bray Wyatt. Your thoughts on that segment?
I mean, I think it's a good first step. It's difficult to really parse how many people who watched WWE were really all that tuned in to what was happening with the broken Hardys in TNA. I mean, clearly it made a splash online, and there was a lot of viewers on those videos, you know, whether it was social media platforms or YouTube or wherever people are catching those types of things. But I really don't know, you know, what the casual fan is going to think of this new Matt Hardy character and how much exposure they would have had to what he was doing. So I thought, you know, the crowd reaction being what it was, which I think was generally positive, was a good sign for the future of the character. I think their biggest challenge ahead of Matt Hardy is convincing, you know, Vince McMahon that this can be a successful thing long term. I don't know what his patience level is going to be with two characters with, you know, Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt that are, you know, on the face of it, somewhat incomprehensible, but they have their own charms to them.
Were there any signs last night of any meddling? I mean, it just seemed so far so good. It just seemed like, okay, that was, they're calling him woken, but that just as easily could have been broken Matt Hardy in TNA.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, talking about the same stuff, you know, a lot of references to terrestrial, you know, the galactic, whatever he was going on about, multiverses, you know, just the things that broken Matt Hardy would talk about. And I think he, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. No, but I think he definitely relates some of that, you know, nonsense and gibberish to his own programs in a way that it kind of fits into what he's doing in context. And that was really what made the broken Hardys successful in TNA, is like you have this character that's seemingly just, you know, lost his mind to madness, but there's always just enough keeping it grounded that makes it really successful and makes it work. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt that Matt Hardy seems to have a deep passion for what he's doing with this. It was his idea, or at least, you know, partly his idea, and he's the driving performer behind it. So I'm optimistic about its future in WWE. I just don't know, you know, how serious they're going to take this in terms of where it's going to end up on the card. Will it ever ascend to be, you know, towards the main event, or is this going to be just one of those things where, you know, Matt Hardy can make a decent run of it in the mid card or something?
And we're one weekend, so there's no way of knowing. But what does your gut tell you when it comes to when Jeff Hardy returns? Is he Brother Nero? Does he spin off in something different? That's it for the broken, woken character. It's time for the Hardys to come back and be the Hardy traveling reunion tour. I guess nostalgia tour, more like it. Where do you think that's all going to go?
I think it really depends on how much success Matt has on his own.
Yeah.
You know, if it's successful and it works, then you can have Matt reintroduce his brother, you know, and pull him out of some, you know, stasis chamber deep in the galactic underworld or whatever the hell he would say in that process. You know, they can reintroduce him as somebody this woken character sort of brought back from, you know, from rehabilitation or injury or something. And I would like to see them both end up working as their, you know, I guess woken or broken gimmicks as a team, because I think that was when it was the most successful, at least in my opinion, because I think Jeff does add something to the equation. But you know, it really is going to depend on how much legs this has, not only, you know, how well Matt Hardy performs, but how much creative attention it gets. You know, it could be something where, you know, Vince or whomever sours on it 5 or 6 weeks in and it just becomes an afterthought. And that would be a disaster to bring Jeff into something like that.
And I guess one scenario I left out is where this all started. It was broken Matt Hardy against his brother Jeff at one point, too. So if Vince wants to kind of make Jeff a singles act, doesn't want to tie him up in this, that is also an option. Jeff expected to be back, and he's targeting WrestleMania time. So, you know, we have some time to wait and see how this all shakes out before then, obviously. Yeah, I'm guardedly optimistic about this, too, and it really is the Vince factor. You know, I think the Broken Universe was the best thing going in TNA for, and it just brought, it was the only thing, as good as I felt like creative was in 2016, it felt like that was the only difference maker when it came to drawing in viewers. And so I'm hopeful that it's going to click on the main roster. And for what it's worth, in WWE, I should say, for what it's worth, Jeff Hardy definitely wants to be Brother Nero, because Johnny Fairplay met up with him at Jeff's concert. It was the week, it was the night of WWE Starrcade, and talked with Jeff for a little bit. And Jeff just makes no bones about it. He says it's like having a night off when he gets to do that. You know, it's completely different. They work a different style and all of that than they do when they're the Hardy Boys. And so I don't know how much input he's going to have into this, but that is his desire based on what he told Johnny. What did you think of, speaking of quirky, and I mean, there's some weird stuff going on Raw right now. Broken Matt, Woken Matt is probably at the top of the list, but maybe next up is Nia Jax suddenly showing some perhaps romantic interest in Enzo Amore.
I thought I had like tripped out on some drugs or something when this was it was just like, what, like, did it really felt like I was hallucinating that whole segment. I honestly didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming. I it made me nervous, to be honest with you, because these relationships end up being like this, a cracked mirror view of Vince's perverted idea of what relationships look like and how they work. And I just feel it could be disastrous for both Nia Jax and Enzo, but you know, it could also work, as we've seen in the past, you know, with you know, some characters get together and they just have this quirky chemistry that ends up, you know, making something on screen work. So I really don't know what to expect from the future of this, but in the moment I was just completely floored that Nia Jax was kind of giving the you know, the winky butterfly eyes at Enzo backstage. He didn't even look like he knew how to react to it. So we'll see where it goes. It just doesn't seem like those characters are anywhere near where they would mesh at this point in time. I think they just ran out of stuff for Nia to do in the women's division because they want to keep Asuka and Absolution strong, and she just doesn't really fit into that picture right now.
Yeah, and hey, I mean, it was well received by the fans. They seemed to get a kick out of it in the building anyway. I share your concern, and it's more so, do they damage Nia by doing this? Do they get too carried away? You know, it's right up Vince's alley. Ah, she's a big girl and he's a smaller guy. That's hilarious. It's kind of silly and childish, but it doesn't mean it can't get over at some level, but I do fear they'll get so caught up in making her all doe-eyed for Enzo and being silly that she ends up somehow losing some of that monster mystique. But hey, we're 1 week in. We'll see how it plays out. The opening segment is one that I know you wanted to talk about, Jake, with you had Jason Jordan out there, and you had Kurt Angle, Roman Reigns, Samoa Joe. It led into a Jordan and Reigns Intercontinental title match. So take it away.
I honestly thought this was one of the better openings to Raw that I can recall in recent memory, just because, you know, even though I think at some level it maybe took up too much time, I think 45 minutes might have been a little long for, you know, just to devote to one angle on a show. But I mean, they got 3 hours to burn. So I think occasionally it's okay to spend this amount of time on a couple of characters. But I think it really put a good focus on the angle that's been happening between, you know, not only Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan, his manipulations, but the Intercontinental Championship, you know, how Roman Reigns is determined to be a fighting champion, and also, you know, his budding conflict with Samoa Joe. It's so rare that we get a very focused segment, you know, that gets anchored by a very good match, and it has a logical, you know, flow to it, not only with how the match is set up, but then, you know, that has the right match finish and then a decent follow-up afterwards. I just thought it was one of those things where it's like, hey, that was a really well-booked 45 minutes of Raw, and I was glad we got to watch it.
I've said this was a great night for Jason Jordan. And basically, long story short on that is it seemed like this is the first time that the crowd got into booing him. And some of it was, you know, there might be a little go-away heat there with the What Chance, but it seemed like the crowd was engaged. They're aware of what he's doing now with his manipulations and feigning the knee injury and the whininess of the character. Did you see it the same way, or was this just a crowd rejecting him again?
I mean, it didn't seem as much like the crowd was like wanting him to go away than it had in previous weeks. Yeah, I think he's settling into this new character where, you know, I think he's slowly evolving into a heel, and you know, they haven't quite tipped over the hat, you know, they haven't played their full hand quite yet. But I think it's to the point now where it's easy to see Kurt Angle being manipulated. Even though he, you know, he seems to have some awareness of the fact. So it's been an interesting thing to watch. At first, I was very pessimistic about the idea of Jordan being, you know, Angle's whatever son. But I think we are building to the point where it may be exposed that this was all a ruse on Jordan's part to advance himself in the company. And I think at that point, he'll really have cemented himself as a decent heel for Raw.
I still get a kick out of, you know, it's usually Kurt. But anytime he's trying to get something out of Angle now, he refers to him as dad. I think that's been a lot of fun. I think that it just feels like the character's starting to click now. And I'm still a little bit concerned that when it comes to his mic work, I think the natural whininess in his voice, is it works for this character. But maybe he's finding his groove, too, because I did feel like last night was just better all around. Another guy that I'm starting to really enjoy as a heel, kind of an up-and-coming heel, is Elias. I thought he was just some weeks are better than others. I've compared it to Breezango and the Fashion Files, where I'm not a big fan of Fashion Files. By the time this most of those segments are over, it's just, eh, whatever. But I always find myself looking forward to seeing what they're going to do next. And I do find myself as initially it was just like, all right, he's going to heal on every city, no big deal. But it just seems like Elias is settling in nicely, and he's gained confidence out there. It just looks like he's relaxed, and it just seems like it's coming natural to him now to go out there and heal on these crowds the way he is. Your thoughts on Elias?
Yeah, I agree with what you said there. I guess what I'll add is that I think he needs some stooges, you know, like he needs some underlings. I think he's the type of character that should be bossing people around. Like, he talks about people walking with him and following him, and he doesn't really have any followers. I think the Miztourage, when they were with him, it kind of felt like a natural fit. Yeah. And whether it's those two, you know, while the Miz is away, they join him, or, you know, they find two other guys to fit into that role. But I think Elias should have some followers and some accompaniment while he's out there giving his hammy musical performances. I think it would add a lot to the act.
Yeah, I don't think Miz needs – I mean, it helps with him cheating to win matches, whether it's distraction finishes or whatever. But I just think he's so polished that he can get by without. And, you know, I do wonder if they were to keep those two the acts together, Miztourage with Elias, if that could lead to even another Miz babyface run. Hopefully it would go better than the first one, because it did. That last bit, Miz babyface run, was a disaster. But I guess the other thing I want to talk about Raw on Raw was the main event. When they did the restart, I'm like, okay, man, they're gonna do a tag title switch. That's usually what a restart leads to, with a babyface authority figure coming out and restarting the match. I was very happy that they didn't, Jake, just because it doesn't feel like it's time. It didn't feel like, you know, obviously the fans loved the Shield, but it wasn't like they were on pins and needles and just, you know, hoping that these guys were going to win the tag titles. It just didn't seem like that was there. It would have been nice. The crowd would have popped because they saw a title change, but it just felt like something you're better off holding off and waiting on so that you don't, in part, damage Sheamus and Cesaro in the process. I think another brief title reign for them would not have been a good thing.
Yeah, I think this was the beginning of the end for the Shield, to be honest with you, as a unit. I think, you know, the Roman failing to make the save and making the mistake of pursuing, you know, the Samoa Joe, and then, you know, kind of letting Ambrose be in the ring to take the fall.
Yeah.
And the bro kick. You know, I think they're I don't know how long it'll be, but I think they're definitely sowing the seeds of a potential Ambrose heel turn, and that's kind of exciting to me, to be honest with you. And I was also happy that they didn't move the tag team championships. You know, I think the Shield holding a bunch of gold isn't necessarily the best thing for the show and the overall storytelling. I mean, maybe at some point you could do it for a short period of time, but it seems like too much. I don't think the Shield I guess they don't need championships as much as Sheamus and Cesaro do to be over. I think just them as a unit is a big enough deal.
So basically, when you get the eventual, if and when we get the eventual Dean Ambrose heel logic promo explaining why he did what he did, that clip is going to be in that video package.
Oh, I would assume so. Yeah. I think it's going to be the point, you know, where enough things will add up to where Dean begins to question how loyal, you know, Roman specifically has been. Or maybe they can do the same thing with Seth at some point, too. But I think the catalyst is going to be Dean shattering the group this time and hopefully sending him on what should be his most memorable run in WWE. We've really been missing a heel run from him for a long time.
One other thing, actually, I want to get your take on. In my WWE Raw hit list, which is available on the main page at ProWrestling.net, I threw out the idea of a trade. Just involving some talent that I don't feel like is really doing much on either brand, but could actually fit in better on the other side. My suggestion was Finn Balor, Luke Gallows, Karl Anderson going to SmackDown in exchange for Bobby Roode, Chad Gable, and Shelton Benjamin. The obvious logic is Balor and Gallows and Anderson become a unit, feud with AJ Styles, feud with Randy Orton, Shinsuke Nakamura. I think the Styles one is especially compelling. Balor's just spinning his wheels right now on the Raw side. I mean, maybe they're setting up something for when Miz returns, but it just seems like he's always this guy they don't know what to do with. And then on the other side of it, the logic with Roode is just, well, he's challenging for the secondary title on SmackDown. He could go to Raw and basically do the same thing. I still think Roode's long-term upside is as a heel. But then with Gable and Benjamin, my thought was that, well, you get Gable on the same brand as Jordan, so you can do something with those two. And heck, if you wanted to, with Shelton, you know, it's like, what do you do with Shelton, though? It's like, well, what about making him Jordan's ally? You know, and based on his history with Kurt, and then when the official turn comes, well, Benjamin can turn on Kurt, too. Your thoughts?
I'm not sure. I don't know if Roode would be the guy that I would move. I think, you know, maybe Jinder Mahal would be a better choice. But I agree with the idea that Finn Balor and Anderson and Gallows would be a much better fit on SmackDown at this point than than Gable and Benjamin. They just don't really seem to have a good fit for them. And I think if you have Balor, Gallows, and Anderson arrive as a unit, then you have an immediate threat to the entire roster. You know, they can become, I guess, the Balor Club, as it were. Obviously they can't use the old name, but that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I think there's a way you could get some more legs out of the Jason Jordan story on Raw by moving Gable and Benjamin over too.
And I'm with you on gender. Going to Raw, the only reason I went with Roode was I tried to kind of slot it where, well, if they're looking for a babyface to come in and kind of do what Balor's doing, which is spin his wheels, well, Roode is kind of doing that on SmackDown. I mean, yeah, he's feuding with Corbin, but yeah, I don't think we're going to get a big trade like this, I'd be surprised, but hopefully it's something that, you know, some of these moves are considering come shakeup time, if nothing else. Join Jake tonight for live coverage of WWE SmackDown. He covers the show every Tuesday night as it airs on USA Network, just as I cover Raw on Monday nights. And then I will be by later this evening after the show for an exclusive, member-exclusive audio review of WWE SmackDown. And John Moore will have his 205 Live report up in the morning at ProWrestling.net. Access.net. And John will probably be going All Access tomorrow. So if you're looking for thoughts on 205 Live, see what they do as far as the announcement of house shows is concerned, be sure to check out John's report and also his Audi review, which brings us to our next topic, our final topic of the day. WWE announcing that they are taking 205 Live on the road with the three house shows coming up here. In January already. It's not Rumble weekend. It's the weekend before the Rumble. Three smaller venues on the East Coast. And Jake, your thoughts on 205 Live running house shows? They just sent out a survey basically trying to get feedback on why people don't like 205 Live is what I took from the survey. I filled it out and I'm going, yeah, they know people don't like the show. And then days later, they announce a house show tour.
Yeah, I don't know what the disconnect is there. I mean, if they're going to do it, I think they're doing it the right way. You know, the Northeast is a fairly healthy wrestling market, and they're smaller venues. You know, they don't have to sell 10,000 seats or something to fill these things up. I think there was one of them that was over 5,000 seats, but I think the others are right around 3. I mean, it really comes across like a big indie show, and given the talent involved and what you can count on in terms of match quality, I think they'll be entertaining. You know, it'll be a fun show to go watch in person, especially with the typical pattern of house shows where they give the guys a bit more freedom. I think you have a chance to see some pretty good action. So I would probably be more likely to go to a 205 Live house show than I would be to sit down and watch an hour of the 205 Live television show.
Yeah, are we going to start getting that now when people attend these shows going, why can't they get the television show right? The house show experience was a blast.
I think it's a real possibility, to be honest with you. It seems like they basically brought in most of the Evolve roster for 205 Live, and then you mix in some talent from NXT. They got Hideo Itami coming up soon, and I guess Enzo has been added a bit of charisma to the show. I mean, I think they have a lot of talent and pieces in place where you could make an entertaining television show out of it, but the creative is just so low effort on average that it must be the last thing they book. Like, they write 7 hours of TV and then they come and they got to go write 205 Live, and it's just like an afterthought, because that's really what it feels like to me on a regular basis.
Absolutely. January 19th in Kingston, Rhode Island at the Ryan Center, January 20th in Lowell, Massachusetts at the Lowell Memorial Auditorium, and January 21st in Poughkeepsie, New York at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. And, I guess it's worth noting that ticket prices, well, they haven't even acknowledged this yet on the Lowell Memorial Auditorium website, at least as of earlier today. But ticket prices between Kingston and Poughkeepsie, one of them started at $15, the other started at $18. The maximum ticket price for one of the shows was $100. Tickets going on sale this week for those shows. Right now, they're advertising Enzo Amore, Kalisto, Jack Gallagher, Hideo Itami, Cedric Alexander, Rich Swann, and Brian Kendrick. And when they first made this announcement, I'm like, man, this seems crazy to me. Like you say, East Coast cities, there could be some interest here. Some of these guys have ties and have done well on the indies before WWE just made them feel like complete nothings, unfortunately. But I thought, well, maybe they're going to bring in the UK talent, because we've seen Progress do well with their, it's a smaller buildings and things, but we've seen them do well in the U.S. so far with a small sample size of shows, and they're not advertised. How big would that be when it comes to just boosting attendance for 205 Live? Is that something you would consider, or do you maybe do this first run of shows, see whatever you can get out of the take what you can get for the attendance and then adjust on the fly, going, all right, maybe the second time through we do bring in the UK talent?
Yeah, I think you'd want to stick to U.S. I mean, it's costly to fly in, you know, UK-based talent or, you know, wherever they're coming from to run a house show. And so I think you may see what you can do for attendance just with their U.S.-based talent. And then, you know, if they think that that would be a big drawing point to where it would be, you know, make it worth it budgetarily, then maybe, yeah, then I would do it for the second run. You know, it really does seem like this is some kind of pilot program. So I think we'll have to see what, you know, kind of attendance numbers come out of this. I'm sure the pictures will probably make their way online at some point, you know, just showing you how full those buildings are. And if they're relatively successful, then yeah, I would think this would expand. I'm kind of surprised that some of the UK talent haven't made their way, you know, into more regular roles on the 205 live TV show, to be honest with you.
I ran a poll yesterday on prowrestling.net asking, if just simply, are you interested in attending a 205 live house show? 72% saying no, 28% saying yes. Now, that said, if they do well, if there are really positive reviews coming out of the first show, you know, then that could change things. If people are like, oh, it's a really good wrestling show, all right, you know, that could certainly help matters. But right now, it does seem like a bit of an uphill battle for them. I mean, they're not investing a lot in these shows, but I'm curious to see how it goes. It was probably the last thing I was expecting to be announced from WWE on Monday, is that they were going to take 205 Live on the road. But obviously, I mean, this is good for the talent. It gets them more bookings. And I think the ongoing issue that you touched on is simply just finding somebody who cares about this creatively. Vince McMahon doesn't seem to care. And so, you know, you have a lot of talented people in that company. Hand it off to someone who does, and let them make 205 Live feel like it matters, because it really isn't a talent issue. It's been a creative issue, but that creative issue has damaged some of the talent. So it's becoming a talent issue on top of it. What are your thoughts on the style? I mean, are they going to let these guys on the house shows go out there and work that indie style, or is it just going to be, what you see in WWE, working that WWE style?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have them go out there and just kill themselves. You know, I mean, I don't think it's worth it to do something extremely risky. But I think they may have a little bit more freedom to do, you know, some different things than they do on the television show. I guess it depends on what the matchups are and what the mix of talent is that make their way to each of these shows, and how, you know, if they're, you know, just basically running the same feuds they are on the 205 live television show. Because I mean, there are a lot more interesting matchups than what we typically get to see, you know, with the breakdown of heels and babyfaces being the way it is. So I think it really just depends on how much the house shows are tied to the booking.
On that note, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take a moment, subscribe to our podcast, rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere else that takes those type of reviews. Those are very helpful. Thanks to those who simply hit the retweet button when I put out the link to the All Access Daily podcast on Twitter. Until next time, take care.